This is Audible.
Sound Booth Theater presents Teresa. Everybody Loves Large Chests, Volume 5. Written by Neven Ilyev. Narrated by Jeff Hayes. Featuring Justin Thomas James as Reggie. And Annie Ellicott as Kira, Drea, Teresa, and other supporting characters. Prologue. Kira Morgana, a fresh-faced Republic recruit, was lauded as the hero of Fort Yemen. While she hadn't participated in the battle directly, she ensured the Republic's victory by convincing 5 immature dryads to help the Elven nation wipe out the invading Imperial forces as part of Operation Honeytrap. Of course, she hadn't solely contributed to the bold plan's success. Much like any military endeavor, it wouldn't have been made possible without strategic planning, raw materials, and the lives of soldiers. However, it seemed that the higher-ups were intent on having a lowly conscript like Kira take a significant portion of the credit. Not only was the Beastkin's part in Operation Honeytrap crucial, but they also wanted to minimize the Sandman's involvement. The mysterious mercenary may have provided the means of awakening the dryads of Fort Yemen, but he was an outsider. The Ishigar Republic's administration didn't want its citizens to know that they were forced to rely on a rogue, unknown element like Sandman. Having a cute, spunky, red-headed, cat-eared conscript serve as the face of their success was a far more attractive proposition. In a fit of delicious irony, the government's propaganda campaign ended up doing nearly exactly what it was supposed to avoid. None of them could fathom the petite cat girl called Kira Morgana and the towering figure of the Sandman were both Boxy T. Morningwood's alter egos. This outcome was ideal for the fledgling shapeshifter. Boxy not only received exorbitant payment for its efforts, but it also benefited from increased trust and recognition from the unsuspecting masses. Such a development would rapidly accelerate the rate at which its doppelganger job gained levels. The shapeshifter wasn't yet aware of this development, however. From its present point of view, its biggest concern was putting the aforementioned dryads to bed, which meant maintaining Kira's character while indulging in their childish whims for a while longer. One such request was to carve the words, "Mommy loves you," into the heartwood of the one called Lily. The monster wasn't quite sure why it was asked to, but it had no reason to object. It had a lot of extra time, and etching letters on the inside walls of an immense tree trunk cost little of it. It was also an opportunity to put Ambrosia's divine language lessons into practice, so it decided to treat the exercise as a learning experience.
"Is this good enough?"
it asked in Kira's sweet voice.
"Yeah, it's the best, Mommy."
Boxy did a marvelous job keeping a straight face as the 5 dryads around it shouted in unison. Those annoying, squeaky voices never failed to get on its nerves. As far as sounds went, the quintuplets' chorus was the opposite of tasty. It put forward its utmost effort to listen, as this was thankfully the last time it would need to.
"I'm glad."
The Beastkin smiled warmly at the dryads. "Your actions have altered the flows of chaos." Boxy's smile quivered involuntarily as the notification popped up in its head. It wasn't sure what it did to trigger its Agent of Chaos skill, but it dreaded the implication that something ridiculous would happen just as those brats fell asleep. It felt that maybe it shouldn't have indulged them so thoroughly. But what was done was done. Its best course of action was pretending nothing happened while it finished putting the dryads to bed.
Mummy,
Pinea spoke up.
"Is it okay if you sang to us again?"
"Yeah, Mummy's songs are always funny and strange,"
Burchess added.
"I really want to hear about the shiny stars again."
"Yeah,
right.
Okay, settle down now,"
she exclaimed while waving her hands around in mock embarrassment.
You girls want a lullaby, then?
What's a lullaby?
They asked all at once.
It's a song to make sure you sleep well. So we're going back to sleep after all?
Pinea cast her eyes downward. While all the dryads clung incessantly to their mommy, she had grown especially attached to Kira.
You have to, sweetie. Otherwise you won't grow up big and strong. You don't want that, do you?
No. But will mommy be there when we wake up?
Absolutely not! I've had enough of you damned brats! Just go to sleep and leave me alone!
Those were Boxy's honest feelings. But Kira obviously had to say something else.
I can't promise that. But you can't let me keep you from achieving your potential. Your future is important to me. So while it pains me to see you go, you have to go back to sleep. It's for your own good.
Pinea's eyes were on the verge of tears, which made the other quintuplets quite emotional as well. Boxy wanted to avoid dealing with a bunch of bawling brats, so it tried to quickly think of something reassuring to tell them.
So, can you do that? Can you be strong for mommy?
Is the best it could come up with. That seemed to do the trick, as the emotional dryad blinked away her tears and looked up with what was probably determination.
Okay, I'll do it. Good girl.
The cat girl smiled, then hugged Pinea.
Hey, no fair!
Shouted the other four in unison.
It's okay. Mommy has plenty of hugs for everyone.
Kira embraced each of them in turn, after which the dryads finally settled in. They laid down on soft beds of leaves and grass, just like their mommy. The redhead then began singing a slow, calming version of the one-of-a-kind song tentatively titled Shiny Star. She sang it over and over for 15 more minutes until the effects of Elder Dryad's authority wore off like clockwork, exactly 1 week since it was activated. By this point, the five juvenile plant girls had already fallen asleep and were sinking slowly into the bark-covered floor of the inner sanctum within Lily's tree. They would eventually return to their own trees through their intermingled roots, so falling into hibernation here wasn't a problem. Not that Boxy cared. It was overjoyed to finally be rid of them, and if everything went well, it would never have to deal with them again. The flows of chaos have returned to their default causal state. Then came a pleasant surprise. It had no idea what the agent of chaos did in that short time. Which was good. If the change wasn't immediately obvious, then Boxy could withdraw from the place without worry. It figured whatever had happened likely wouldn't take full effect until the next time the quintuplets woke up. Which, as far as it was concerned, would be so far into the future that it wasn't worth worrying about. It therefore decided to pay no heed to the streaks of red spreading through the dryad's green grass hair as they sank into the floor. The dryads officially became someone else's problem. Chapter 1. The Difficulty of Caring. Part 1. After actively ignoring any responsibility it might have had for potentially catastrophic future events, Boxy was looking forward to getting some rest. Though not physically demanding, babysitting those brats was mentally draining. The monster couldn't retire just yet, though. Before the battle ended, it convinced the dryads to retrieve 150 of the more well-preserved, stronger-looking bodies from the field. Those corpses were currently piled up in the corner of Lily's safe room, eagerly awaiting the shapeshifter's attention. They were surprisingly well preserved, considering 2 days passed since their death, and Boxy was eager to see what it could gain from them. Without further ado, the former mimic set about processing every one of those morsels with cadaver absorption. The skill failed to gain anything from most of them, which was expected. It wasn't too bothered since the sheer volume of corpses meant there would inevitably be quite a few successes. 11 of them were minor ones that granted it a number of raw attributes, totaling 144 strength, 98 dexterity, 41 agility, 97 endurance, 120 intelligence, and 44 wisdom. It was a significant boost in power, but the highlights of the harvesting session were the outcomes that resulted in new skills and jobs. Your cadaver absorption was a moderate success. 26% of the target's highest skill proficiency has been added to your own. Proficiency level increased. Axe mastery is now level 6. Strength, plus 18. Dexterity, plus 6. Your cadaver absorption was a major success. 26% of the target's highest job level has been added to your own. Level up. Level up. Congratulations. You are now a level 13 rogue. Dexterity, plus 26. Agility, plus 26. Endurance, plus 26. Your cadaver absorption was a moderate success. 26% of the target's highest skill proficiency has been added to your own. Proficiency level increased. Sword mastery is now level 10. Strength, plus 2. Dexterity, plus 2. Your cadaver absorption was a major success. 26% of the target's highest job level has been added to your own. Job slots full. Unable to learn job, priest. Proficiency level increased. Cadaver absorption is now level 9. All attributes plus 1. Your cadaver absorption was a moderate success. 26% of the target's highest skill proficiency has been added to your own. Proficiency level increased. Shield mastery is now level 10. Strength plus 4. Endurance plus 4. Your cadaver absorption was a moderate success. 26% of the target's highest skill proficiency has been added to your own. The natural affinity attribute has been created by a special action. Affinity plus 1. Proficiency level increased. Primal mastery is now level 5. Affinity plus 10. Intelligence plus 5. Wisdom plus 5. Unfortunately, the skills obtained were not all that tasty. The extra attribute boosts were nothing to complain about, but Boxy seriously doubted that axe mastery and primal mastery would ever come into use. While axes had some battle applications, Boxy preferred swords and daggers because they allowed it to fully utilize its finesse and precision. Not only were they quieter, but also stabbing someone to death made it easier to hide and preserve the body as opposed to hacking them apart. Primal mastery was even more useless. As the name implied, the skill bolstered the effects of spells belonging to the primal school of magic. Only druids and shamans used such incantations, and Boxy was neither. At the very least, acquiring the skill unlocked the creature's natural affinity attribute, though it wasn't immediately apparent how it would be useful to Boxy. From what it understood, affinity measured one's sensitivity to the natural forces and made certain druid and shaman skills more effective. It was a somewhat abstract attribute that could rise and fall depending on the individual's actions, similar to faith. Boxy hoped it wouldn't cause problems if it happened to dip into the negatives. Skills aside, the job gains weren't exciting either. As Boxy suspected, rogue skills had a lot of overlap with the abilities of its mimic job. Additionally, the newly acquired vocation took up the shapeshifter's 8th and apparently final job slot. At least it wasn't another permanent blemish on its status like that useless cat job. The monster could easily have a scribe remove the rogue job once it got back to Azurvale, and it had every intention of doing so. It was something Boxy did several times in the past, so it had the process down to a science. First, it masqueraded itself as a disillusioned rookie adventurer who wanted to start over with a clean slate. It was a common story that didn't raise any questions so long as the relevant fees were paid. Initially, the shapeshifter held some reservations regarding the procedure since it was loath to revisit the foggy, painful memory of having its warlock job forcibly taken. However, it had since learned that job removal was completely painless so long as the individual willingly participated. In such cases, the worst possible side effects were a bit of memory loss, a mild case of depression, and a sudden onset of fatigue. Conversely, a forced job removal would result in the physically and mentally traumatizing experience Boxy underwent during its imprisonment. The separation was more harrowing as its body and mind instinctively resisted having parts of them stripped away. This resistance wasn't completely in vain, as job removal could not forcibly target jobs of equal or higher level to the user's scribe job. In other words, it was theoretically impossible to take away someone's level 100 job unless they willed it. In practice, the threshold was even lower since very few scribes reached a level higher than 80 in their lifetimes. The subject of lifespans was one that had given Boxy a bit of distress. According to its research, dungeon mimics would normally only live for a year before their unstable bodies began to rapidly degenerate. Though it already evolved beyond that species, the shapeshifter couldn't help but feel this was unfair. It was also relieved to learn that, barring rank-ups, doppelgangers would outlive enlightened races by a few decades on average. According to records from the days of the Silent War, there were quite a few doppelgangers with ages in the triple digits at the time of their capture. Boxy felt good about not having to worry about old age for a long, long time. A far more pressing concern was surviving long enough to reach that point. It didn't matter how long-lived an individual was if they couldn't avoid getting murdered by a devious monster. The holy necromancer and the idiotic warlock that died in the siege of Fort Yemen were prime examples of this harsh truth. The necromancer was already subjected to the cadaver absorption, but Boxy got nothing out of him since the skill failed. Because, of course, it failed. The current success rate was roughly 1 in 10, so the odds weren't in the creature's favor. Boxy, bummed out by the statistics, lessened its expectation for the potential gains from Shinji's corpse. Still, in the event it got lucky, the monster wanted to maximize its gains. It decided to keep the foolish Otherworlder's remains safely tucked away inside its storage until it was able to raise the maximum level of its warlock job above 50. However, before anything could happen, Boxy Team Morningwood had to overcome its next trial. Mentally preparing itself for what was to come, the monster ever so slightly changed Kira's relentlessly smiling face. The catgirl's mouth curled into a small, barely there frown, while her bright eyes, full of energy, became oddly dull as she cast them at her feet. She hugged herself across the stomach as if she were cold and made sure her head, shoulders, tail, and ears were visibly drooping.
"Is this enough?" it pondered. "Or is it too much? I'm not entirely sure. Well, only way to be sure is to try it out and see what happens."
The catgirl walked out of the silent safe room for the very last time and stepped out onto a massive, road-sized branch hundreds of meters above the ground. The dryads were previously responsible for transporting her to and from that altitude, but they were no longer awake. As such, Kira needed an alternate route down to the ground. Her superiors foresaw this issue and stationed a wizard on the branch. The middle-aged elf was supposed to fly her down with his magic, but he momentarily forgot his duty when his eyes laid upon the distraught-looking redhead. Her quiet sadness tugged at his heartstrings, rendering him speechless. He wanted to say something encouraging to cheer her up, but he wasn't exactly in a great mood himself. Though his side claimed victory in the battle, the gruesome nature of it would no doubt haunt the nightmares of all who witnessed it. He couldn't imagine how the girl that shouldered the responsibility for that massacre would feel. He ended up levitating himself and the beastkin down to ground level in an awkward silence. He also noticed she was quite a bit heavier than she looked, though the heavy air around her kept him from saying anything insensitive. The two of them touched down on one of the keep's rounded corner towers. The carnage from the slaughter 2 days ago was mostly cleaned up, but the air was still heavy with the stink of blood and death. The bodies of the fallen soldiers and adventurers were either buried or cremated with magic, but only after being sanctified. Ghastly battlefields were a common place for the undead to rise and spread their blight, so it was necessary to take certain precautions to ensure the casualties of war stayed put. The victor, through common sense and international law, was responsible for enacting these measures with utmost care and respect for the dead.
"What a waste of human flesh."
Of course, those were enlightened sensibilities, so a certain monster held an entirely different view on the matter.
Are you okay?
The wizard asked, clearly worried.
Hmm?
Kira stared blankly at him.
You, spaced out for a second there.
Yes, I'm okay. Or at least I will be. Eventually.
She weakly mustered. That was close. Boxy remembered the absolutely intoxicating smell of 20,000 humans' worth of freshly spilled blood and nearly cracked a smile. It was a feast beyond anything it had ever seen, yet it could only claim a tiny fraction for fear of raising too much suspicion. Simply put, it was a disappointing outcome.
Look,
the elf spoke up again.
I know High Command wants to speak with you as soon as possible, but if you—
I said I'm fine!
She snapped back, causing the man to slightly recoil.
I'm sorry about that. I'll be going now, and thanks for the lift.
She finished the exchange with a weak smile as she opened one of the wooden trap doors in the floor, headed down the tower's spiral stone staircase, and stepped into the keep itself. She walked to the familiar conference room and entered it after knocking to announce her presence. Inside were four faces she grew accustomed to seeing over the past week: Primus Underwood, Prefect Vera, Legate Aiden, and the slightly mysterious strategist called Draenor. She made sure to rest her eyesight on Fayhorn's empty seat for a good 3 or 4 seconds before sitting down in front of her superior officers.
Ahem!
Underwood forcibly cleared his throat.
Now that we're all assembled, let us begin the debriefing post-haste.
Quite so, nodded the legate. Now then, Decanus Morgana, am I to understand those dryads have returned to sleep?
Yes, sir,
she replied with a monotone, almost whispering voice.
Do you know when they'd wake up?
No, sir.
Did they show any disturbing or out-of-place signs following the 2 days after Operation Honeytrap?
No, sir.
Boxy felt it unnecessary to mention their hair had turned a weird color.
Have you received any contact from the Sandman?
The legate continued.
Crap. I completely forgot they wanted that guy's shiny amulet,
the monster realized.
Well, I'll take care of it later tonight.
No, sir.
Very good, Decanus. Go get some rest and report to Primus Underwood first thing in the morning for your next assignment.
Yes, sir.
Kira stood up, gave a firm salute towards the empty seat, and walked out of the room practically dragging her feet. It was an exceedingly short meeting, but the majority of the issues and details were addressed during the initial debriefing less than an hour after the Lodrak Empire's retreat. The catgirl hadn't yet been told of Milo Fayhorn's death at the time, so her attitude had been considerably more upbeat. Her current solemn behavior served to punctuate that the victory at Fort Yemen was a grisly, regretful, and costly affair. Once she left the room, Underwood couldn't help but repeat his lost friend's words of wisdom.
Have I mentioned I hate this war?
That's enough of that, Primus,
the legate reprimanded him.
Apologies, sir.
Well, I'm with Underwood on this one,
said Vera.
Seeing that girl, it makes it hard to think of all this death as just numbers. I mean, did we truly do the right thing?
Of course we did,
Draenor stated bluntly.
If we did nothing, we would have lost countless more of our people. I may have been skeptical at first, but that girl's actions saved the entire Western Front. If word spreads that hilt trees could fight back against invaders, then the Empire wouldn't dare come near this fort ever again. With some luck, they might assume that all hilt trees are like that, and would be far warier of them as a result. With some luck, they might even hesitate to attack the Republic in the first place.
The legate nodded grandly in agreement, then turned his head towards Silas.
Primus, can your Sandman contact lend us that orb again? Or perhaps let us hold on to it permanently?
No, sir. He claimed the Elder Dryad's authority took a long time and a lot of effort to recharge, so it wouldn't be feasible to use it twice in the same season.
Are we sure he's not just saying that?
As I explained before, sir, I already had some people examine the dormant crystal while it was in our possession. They found absolutely nothing about its construction or function, nor did they make any sense of the chant used to activate it. Worse still, it was lacking even a single speck of mana, even after several days since its use. It's likely the type of item that requires some ritual or rite before it could be used again.
This conclusion was technically correct, but Underwood's scholars had no idea the Elder Dryad's authority was, at its core, nothing more than a mana storage device. Ambrosia had filled it with her magical energy in a matter of minutes and could easily do so again. While there was indeed a ritual required to recharge it, it was as simple as giving it back to its owner.
We could have held onto it and researched it more thoroughly, but none of my people were confident they could handle it,
Underwood reported.
After considering our military situation, we decided the Sandman's continued cooperation was more valuable than the authorities' potential.
I see, said the Legate. Considering the results, it's hard to argue with that decision.
Frankly speaking, the mercenary had more than earned his paycheck just by eliminating an enemy VIP in a one-on-one confrontation. He was a fearsome ally, but could easily become a troublesome enemy if the Republic didn't uphold their side of the bargain.
Still, I think it would be good to borrow it again as soon as it is recharged, he added.
Sir, I feel that would be unwise,
Vera objected.
Even if we could trigger it, I doubt any of us could actually use it.
What do you mean, Prefect?
Well, Fayhorn said it himself, sir. That authority merely gives the user a warm welcome from the Dryads and opens the floor for negotiations. But trying to convince them to take our side and slaughter our enemy with very little to offer in return? I don't think it would be easy, especially considering how indifferent they appear to our plight.
The elf in charge fell silent as he considered those words. The memories of him trying, and failing, to communicate with those green children over the past week perfectly illustrated Vera's concerns.
There's also the fact that we, if you permit the casual tone, lucked out big time,
the prefect continued.
Operation Honeytrap only worked because the fort was home to a group of impressionable youngsters that latched on to a suitable surrogate mother figure by accident. I sincerely doubt that would happen with a more mature dryad, especially considering what happened with Lady Immeril.
Very valid points indeed, Prefect. It seems I failed to fully consider the personal element. I shall take your words into advisement. Now, on to the next point of order. Primus, what of the Decanus?
What about her, sir?
Will she be able to fulfill her duties as a soldier of the Republic's Third Legion?
Underwood couldn't help but frown slightly.
Sir, are you planning to send her on another mission straight away?
It wasn't as if he was being protective of her because she was his old friend's star pupil. It was simply in his nature as an officer to ensure those under his command were treated carefully.
Not exactly.
The Legate leaned forward, putting his elbows against the table.
While things have more or less settled down on this side, the Eastern Front is struggling. They've requested reinforcements, and I plan to send 3,000 troops their way, including the Decanus and her squad.
If I may ask, sir, why send her specifically?
Sandman business aside, she is still an excellent scout. Although I am loath to let her go, the Second Legion desperately needs her help defending the Rainy Woodlands. If she is able, of course.
I see.
He grasped what Aiden was getting at. A soldier existed to fight during wartime and to remain vigilant at peacetime. However, one could hardly call the girl a soldier. She may have some ability, but her mental state was in question. That was why the Legate inquired about her well-being. Sending their comrades a potential liability could do more harm than good to the Republic's operations in that region.
I believe it would be unwise to dispatch her immediately, sir, Underwood assessed. Although Fayhorn's... passing was doubtlessly quite hard on her. It isn't the main cause of her current state of mind. Regardless of her words at the time, it would seem she is having trouble dealing with the consequences of her actions. I understand she feels personally responsible for the death of all those Imperial soldiers. Frankly speaking, only a monster would feel nothing after killing so many people, even if they did so indirectly or under orders.
I thought as much, the Legate sighed. Even I could tell at a glance she was deeply troubled.
Although the monster in question wasn't around to hear them, those words proved Boxy succeeded at one of its toughest acting challenges yet. The shapeshifter could easily express sadness, happiness, or anger because it experienced these firsthand. Zira's demonstrations combined with its affection for shiny chests allowed it to flirt and act like it cared for someone, albeit at an extremely basic and rudimentary level. Still, Kira's obvious inexperience with matters of love only made her seem more genuine and endearing in Rowana's eyes, so it worked out in Boxy's favor. However, that shameless monster being burdened by a sense of guilt and remorse over something it did? Such a thing was impossible. Even though Clarissa, the goddess of dice rolls, would say there was a non-zero chance of it happening, it was still less likely than the whole planet turning into an incomprehensibly large cheese wheel overnight. More specifically, cheddar or gouda. Maybe camembert. Blue cheese was right out. Planetary-scale dairy products aside, feelings such as grief, remorse, or guilt were so removed from Boxy T. Morningwood's understanding that it hesitated to ask whether such emotions were actually tasty or not. This made acting out these feelings as Kira quite troublesome. Thankfully, it knew the theory behind what it was doing since it read a book about something or other. What was it called again? Post-tastastic shiny disorder? Whatever it was, it taught the shapeshifter about the face it needed to make and the way it should act. That was only a theory, though. No matter how much it practiced over the last few days, it always felt its performance came off unnaturally stiff and artificial. Due to this, it avoided contact with others as much as possible and was understandably worried about this debriefing. And yet, Boxy's ruse was a success despite its lack of confidence in its acting skills. The monster severely underestimated the power of Kira's expertly sculpted appearance, a perfect blend of beautiful and cute. A man whose heart wasn't moved after seeing her bright and innocent smile disappear was no man at all. As a certain otherworlder once said, "Cute is justice." Then again, he spoke a lot of nonsensical phrases such as, "A flat chest is a status symbol," or, "Yes, Lolita, no touch." But even a broken clock was right twice a day.
"However, we want to send her there regardless of whether she's ready to fight," insisted Dranor the strategist. "While she may be capable in her own right, this Sandman character is also quite valuable. And for better or worse, he will only meet face to face with this Decanus. They're a package deal, whether we like it or not."
"You want to use him again?" Underwood raised an eyebrow.
"Of course. I will admit I was skeptical of the Dryads at first. Not to mention I still don't fully trust the guy. But by all accounts, his personal might is quite substantial. We would be fools not to take advantage of someone who could single-handedly kill a VIP if all he's asking for is money. We just need to maintain a cordial long-distance relationship and keep him from getting too involved with the government and its citizens."
"I understand. Would it be possible to at least give her some time to recover from her mental distress?"
The strategist fell into thought as he considered all the variables. Ever the diligent one, Dranor made sure to keep himself updated on the other front's status. The Republic there used the terrain and wilderness to slow the Empire's advance to a crawl. By his estimate, although it would take some time, the reinforcements coming from Fort Yimin would allow for a stalemate of sorts. Once they did, introducing an unknown element like the Sandman might tip the balance in their favor. As for time, there was still a month before winter truly began, then perhaps a dozen or so days before it froze the Empire in their tracks.
"We can afford a week,"
he concluded.
Very good, declared the legate. Primus, give the Decanus a week to recuperate at home, then evaluate if she is fit for duty. If she is, deploy her immediately.
Yes, sir.
Then let's move on to the next topic. Prefect, have we located Fayhorn's weapon?
While the deceased ranger's body was found and recovered, his trademark bow was still missing. It was a superb item, even amongst its artifact-grade peers, though its value went beyond its abilities. Considering who wielded it and what he had accomplished with it made the bow worthy of being considered a national treasure.
No.
Vera nearly bit her lip.
And it's likely we won't. We've already scoured the area around the tree 5 times, but we've found no sign of it. Most likely someone looted it during or after the siege.
I see. Then I suppose I should request the government put out a bounty for it.
A legate held a good deal of political power, so Aiden could get something like that handled post-haste.
With all due respect, that would be a bad idea, sir, said Underwood. The item's common appearance means we'll have a huge influx of frauds, scammers, or simply people who confused it with a regular weapon. Processing all those would put quite a bit of strain on the government's scribes.
Well, that's to be expected with any item bounty, Dranor pointed out. I'm more concerned with the possibility whoever took it is either a collector, or they sold it to one in secret. Such people are liable to go underground and cover their tracks when they find out the government is looking for it. I think a covert investigation is a more prudent approach.
All of our spies are busy with the war, though, argued Underwood.
But if we don't act now, the trail will just grow cold. Wait too long and we might lose it completely.
So shall we appoint some of our drafted adventurers to track it down instead? Surely we won't miss a few dozen of them.
No, doing such a thing has certain political ramifications.
The argument regarding the late Milo Fayhorn's weapon lasted for a long time. However, this particular discussion, along with the decades of searching that followed, were all for naught. The Republic would eventually give up recovering the artifact, and the ridiculous bounty for it would remain unclaimed. The bow, known as Enduring Gale, was carved out of an ancient hilt tree's heartwood, and had already begun fusing with the branch it landed on by the time its last owner had hit the ground. General information. You may skip to the next part. Boxy T. Morningwood. Doppelganger. Juvenile. 7 months old. Member of Hidden Arrow. Level 23 Doppelganger. Level 50 Mimic. Max. Level 5 Cat. Max. Level 50 Warlock. Max. Level 18 Artificer. Level 30 Ranger. Level 20 Blade Dancer. Level 13 Rogue. 4,854 out of 4,854 HP, plus 18.4 per second. 3,863 out of 3,863 MP, plus 6.7 per second. Attributes. Strength, 619. Dexterity, 676. Agility, 626. Endurance, 847. Intelligence, 729. Wisdom, 489. Luck, 217. Mental fortitude, 370. Charisma, 206. Perception, 230. Faith, 17. Affinity, 12. Mimic skills. Assassination, level 10. Max. Storage, level 10. Max. Cadaver absorption, level 9. Biomass, level 12. Natural armor, level 10. Max. Metal Mimicry, level 10, max. Mend Flesh, level 10, max. Adaptive Defense, level 7. Absorbed Skills. Acid Spray, level 10, max. Divine Attunement, level 4. Cat Skills. Feline Agility, level 8. Doppelganger Skills. Mirror Image, level 6. Pheromone Control, level 5. Broken Reflection, level 3. Puppet Parasite, level 4. Warlock skills. Summon Familiar, level 10, max. Power overwhelming. Level 9. Demonology. Level 7. Crystallize magic. Level 9. Chant reduction. Level 5. Demonic insight. Level 6. Despair aura. Level 4. Soul link. Level 3. Artificer skills. Clockwork expertise. Level 5. Explosives handling. Level 4. Deconstruction. Level 3. Ranger skills. Tracking. Level 4. Marksman. Level 5. Whisper wind. Level 4. Fleet footed. Level 3. Hunter's mark. Level 2. Blade dancer skills. Hornet style. Level 4. Adagio variation. Level 3. Winter Lich waltz. Level 3. Evasion. Level 4. Hero skills. Chaotic disposition. Level 1. Max. Agent of Chaos. Level 1. Max. Essence concealment. Level 1. Max. Other skills. Shapeshift. Level 13. Stealth. Level 10. Max. Lockpick. Level 3. Sword mastery. Level 7. Meditation. Level 4. Projectile mastery. Level 8. Dagger mastery. Level 10. Max. Ruin mastery. Level 12. Domination mastery. Level 8. Shield mastery. Level 10. Max. Staff mastery. Level 5. Bow mastery. Level 6. Axe mastery. Level 6. Primal mastery. Level 5. Spells and martial arts. Ruin spells. Shadow bolt. Ebon fire. Frostbite. Dark explosion. Shadow bind. Singularity. True darkness. Massive rejection. Reality slash. Domination spells. Mass panic. Delirium. Dark infusion. Mind blast. Hysteria. Mind control. Other spells. Implosion. Transfamiliar. Demonate. Marksman arts. Power shot. Guided arrow. Multi-shot. Blast arrow. Shrapnel shot. Part 2. Kira walked into Underwood's office and gave him a dispirited salute.
Decanus Morgana, reporting for duty, sir.
She talked in a low, shaky voice, and there were heavy bags under her eyes, implying she didn't get much sleep that night. Underwood involuntarily groaned at her appearance. Seeing such a normally happy girl so incredibly depressed tugged on the elf's heartstrings. He wanted to hug her, comfort her, tell her everything would be all right. However, he kept such emotions in check as best he could. Not only was it highly inappropriate from a professional standpoint, but he also knew full well she had a special someone in Azurvale who would be more than happy to fill that role. That was why it pained him to say what he was about to say. But this, too, was part of his duty.
Decanus, you have an important mission today. You'll be meeting with Mr. S. again.
Her tired eyes went wide, and she pulled back a little.
Is he going to give me another weapon of mass slaughter?
She asked warily.
No, nothing like that.
Silas wanted to comment an elder dryad's authority wasn't technically a weapon in and of itself. However, doing so would only hammer home the fact this girl was largely responsible for all the death that followed its use. The best he could do was reassure her with his words.
What you're fetching today is an old heirloom of significant historical and cultural value.
And it won't, like, turn the fort into a crater or anything?
I would certainly hope not. Though the item in question is magical in nature, I am told it is quite inert.
You're sure?
I'm sure, yes. It is perfectly safe to handle on its own.
On its own, huh? Boxy noted. So that shiny amulet is part of something bigger? No wonder wearing it didn't seem to give me any special effects.
Sir, if I may ask, if it's really harmless, then why would Mr. S. even have it?
Underwood had to fight back the urge to snort with laughter.
I can understand your confusion. Given what we know of the man's methods, it would only be natural to assume everything on his person is superbly dangerous. However, the object in question was something he claimed from the Empire's forces during the battle. It was originally ours, and we want it back. That's all you need to know.
The amulet was actually a fragment of the authority of the crown, a powerful phantasmal-grade relic once the property of the royal bloodline of the Elven Dominion. The item was shattered into hundreds of pieces during the Dominion's fall 4 centuries ago. The authority of the crown possessed the power to influence the elvish people's minds on a grand scale, which made it incredibly dangerous in the wrong hands. The Republic spent the last few centuries collecting amulet shards to prevent such hands from grabbing it. It wasn't certain whether the item could be pieced back together, but the Elven nation wasn't taking any chances. Hence why the hunt for the so-called Shards of the Crown was kept a secret. Even Underwood didn't know all the details, so he couldn't tell Kira even if he wanted to.
Understood, sir,
replied the girl with a bit more vigor in her voice.
I'll get ready right away.
Hold up, Decanus. The officer stopped her. You're not going alone.
Well, yeah. The typical escort will be there, right?
That's true. But I mean, there's someone else who demanded to come along.
Does Mr. S know about this?
No, he does not.
Of course, Kira already knew the answer. Underwood said nothing about a special visitor over the comm crystal when they last spoke the day before yesterday, so it took this opportunity to probe the man for information.
And he doesn't necessarily need to, the elf added.
Sir?
The person in question wants to meet with the dryad in the tree, not Mr. S. A deal was made, and we have to arrange the meeting to honor our side of it.
And by we, you mean me, right?
Yes. I know this is sudden, but its approval came late last night, and I couldn't contact Mr. S to let him know. I'll be counting on you to smooth things over with the man.
I'll do my best, sir.
Good. Lastly, this outsider's presence is why we'll be sending along some extra muscle along with the standard dispatch. They should be able to easily subdue him if he tries something, but be on your guard regardless.
I understand, sir. I'll make sure to do the Third Legion proud.
Excellent. Gear up and meet with the escort south of the fort in 20 minutes. Dismissed, Decanus.
Yes, sir.
Kira saluted once more and walked out of the room. While she seemed to liven up somewhat during the briefing, Underwood saw it as a mask, a flimsy reassurance to the others she was all right. He let out a brief sigh and stared out the window overlooking the still blood-stained interior walls of Fort Yemen.
I should have told her we were about to send her home.
He briefly regretted not letting her know she'd most likely see her beloved before the day was out, but he wasn't completely sure what would happen beneath the tree to the south. It was best not to stoke false hope that might distract her from her duties. Then again, perhaps a distraction was what she needed most, considering everything that transpired. The same could be said of Silas Underwood himself, but the man was, for better or for worse, already accustomed to dealing with loss. He kept staring idly out the window, losing track of time as his thoughts wandered. He snapped out of it when he caught sight of Kira crossing the courtyard on her way out of the fort. A small smile spread across his face. That vibrant red hair of hers stood out way too much.
Well, she'll get better as long as she keeps active. I'll leave it to those guys to cheer her up a bit.
Down on the ground, Kira walked past the remains of the south-facing wall just as Underwood was returning to his duties. A team of adventurers and soldiers were still clearing away the rubble and flattening the upturned soil. The bodies and their equipment had been taken care of by this point, and only ominous stains remained as evidence of the carnage that had taken place. Once Kira was officially out of the fort, she immediately located her escort in the distance. It wasn't much of a feat, since a platoon of fully armed soldiers stood out like sore thumbs on the grassy, clattering plains. The idle elven soldiers noticed Kira's approach and instantly scrambled, lining up into 3 rows. However, only 2/3 of the original 50-man unit were present. Those missing had died in the siege and had since been replaced by new, unfamiliar faces. Boxy made sure to dial up Kira's gloominess an extra notch as it approached the formation. The officer in charge of this particular platoon, the same elf as before the siege, stepped forward and saluted.
Decanus Morgana, ma'am. Permission to speak freely.
It was strange that the elf, who technically held a higher rank, was speaking so formally to Kira, but the catgirl decided to roll with it.
Go ahead, Optio.
The officer went down on one knee and bowed forward, putting both of his fists on the ground. Much to Kira's surprise, all of the other soldiers followed suit.
Thank you.
What?
If it wasn't for you, we'd all be dead.
Oh, come on. Really?
Boxy groaned inwardly.
Just let me do my job and go home!
But...
The girl stuttered.
You're... Comrades, and I...
We were all prepared to throw away our lives, ma'am.
That nosy meatstick Underwood probably put them up to this crap, didn't he?
It was your intervention that made the other sacrifices meaningful.
And how come they pulled that off so flawlessly?
It also gave us, who were left behind, the chance to see another dawn.
Did they rehearse bowing in unison or something?
The chance to meet our loved ones once again.
And this long-ass speech. Really? Come on! I have shinies to acquire!
And for that, we are more grateful than you could ever know.
Ah! What a pain in the lid. Now I have to act all moved and stuff.
Boxy repressed its true feelings and put on an admirable show for the soldiers.
You're very welcome.
The catgirl's quivering lips curled into the first seemingly genuine smile she'd mustered since the siege. She wiped away a few tears and sniffled several times, holding back her fake feelings of imagined gratitude. Seemingly satisfied with the reaction, the entire platoon stood back up on their feet and readied themselves for departure with their heads held high.
Is our visitor here yet?
The redhead collected herself.
Visitor, ma'am?
Yes, Mr. Primus Underwood said we would be escorting a person of interest to the meeting today, along with some additional security.
First I hear of it, ma'am. Our briefing certainly didn't say anything about it.
Apparently it was decided late last night. Very short notice.
Understood. In that case, it must be them coming up behind you.
Kira turned around and spotted three figures moving towards her. On the right was the one-woman army known simply as Hilda. Her armor still bore battle scars, but they were rather minor considering how much of a pounding the suit had taken. On the left was Lady Imiril, the once haughty high elf wizard. A single look at her pale, grimacing face gave the impression she really didn't want to be there. Understandable, considering she was ordered to revisit the residence of the sadistic dryad that had humiliated her so. While it was surprising to see these two big names, the person they were escorting was a greater cause for alarm. He stood at a height of well over 2 meters, though not nearly as tall as the average fiend. His dark brown skin was covered in ritualistic bright yellow tattoos, clearly visible across his large, bare, chiseled chest. He seemed like the sort of person who wouldn't hesitate to go completely nude, but thankfully his lower half was clothed in a pair of tattered, stained hemp trousers. His clean-shaven head dimly shone in the morning sun, while his bare feet made dull sounds as they flattened the grass underneath. Last but not least, his ankles, wrists, and neck were bound by a set of insanely thick rune-inscribed shackles and chains that made it clear he was a prisoner.
Yo!
The dwarf waved at Kira.
How's it hanging, Miss Mary Popper? Miss Hilda!
The redhead shouted indignantly.
Please stop using that embarrassing nickname. Aw, but it fits you so well, especially after what you did at the siege.
Kira was instantly glum once more.
Yeah. That's right, isn't it? I'm nothing but a monster.
Hilda, you blockhead!
Imiril spoke up. The wizard struck the dwarf's helmet with her staff, eliciting a clear, gong-like ring.
Oi, what's the big deal, you stuck-up cunt? That's my line. Please avoid upsetting Miss Morgana any more than you already have.
Since when do you care about her anyway?
I really don't want to risk provoking that thing because the messenger wasn't feeling well.
Excuse me.
The towering prisoner spoke with a deep voice like melted butter, instantly drawing attention to himself.
I would appreciate it if you refrained from speaking of the Honorable Lady Dryad in such a disrespectful manner.
Honorable? There's nothing honorable about that monster.
Calm your tits, beanbag,
Hilda said with a sigh.
Just keep your trap shut and you'll be fine. Probably.
Fair enough, I just don't...
Imeril grumbled out an agreement and went back to quietly seething. Her behavior made the foot soldiers question whether she was the best person for this mission. She wasn't, although the local forces didn't have a choice. Standard security procedure demanded that prisoners of a significant level had to be escorted by at least twice as many people of similar strength. Some considered this overkill, but overwhelming force was necessary to non-fatally subdue potential escapees. It was hard to avoid casualties when dealing with a character of Hilda's caliber, especially when the other side was shackled, unarmed, and drained of their MP.
Who exactly is this?
Kira pointed at the big brown guy.
Ah, that's right. You wouldn't know.
Hilda turned to her.
This here is one of the Empire's VIPs. His name is Rocky and he's...
Rooklunda, the man interjected.
If I say your name is Rocky, then your fucking name is Rocky!
The berserker punched Rooklunda's knee with enough force to make him fall down and buckle over. The unpleasant sound, combined with the weird way his leg was bent, made it quite obvious his kneecap was shattered. It looked like it hurt immensely. Yet all the victim did was inhale sharply and groan under his breath as he struggled back to his feet.
Can't get too soft on this guy. Needs to know his place and all that.
Hilda grumbled while giving him the stink eye.
Anyway, Rocky here, aka the Black Tower, willingly surrendered after those five ladies were done with their performance. He fed the higher-up some sob story about being deceived and losing his reason to fight us. Then struck some kind of deal with him. And now we have to make sure he meets with the Sandman's cunt flower.
Do not refer to...
A vicious punch to his other knee cut Rocky's protest short and forced him to the ground once more.
Enough for you, Rocky. Or should I start working on your ribs next? You know I'm in the clear so long as I don't kill you, right?
Point taken, he growled through gritted teeth.
See? Who says you can't teach an old troll new tricks? Anyway, that's the long and short of what we're doing out here.
I see.
Kira put on an expression of not my problem as she turned to face the squad she was responsible for.
You three.
She pointed to two priests and a druid.
Quickly heal the prisoner's injuries so he doesn't slow us down.
Yes, ma'am.
They answered as one and got busy.
What? But how will he learn his lesson if you do that?
Hilda protested.
Then I suppose you want to carry him the whole way?
The redhead shot back. The dwarf looked over the towering pile of man and very rapidly arrived at an answer.
Fine.
She relented.
Have it your way, then.
Her armor and weapons already weighed plenty, so she was not confident she had enough strength left over to carry that guy as well. That wasn't even considering the unwieldy size of him. In any event, Rocky was healed within less than a minute and stood up as soon as he was able to. Imeril then somewhat reluctantly opened a transfer gate. Even Boxy could tell her gates were of a different quality and size than the ones her apprentices made. However, there was one slight problem. The hilt tree in question was technically visible on the other side of the portal, but it was so far away it would take an hour to reach on foot.
Miss Imeril,
Kira sighed, sounding tired.
As the one in command of this mission, I order you to place us closer to our destination.
Yes, ma'am.
The High Elf begrudgingly closed the portal and opened another one. This one was 200 meters from the trunk, exactly where she was supposed to open it in the first place. The platoon, the prisoner, and his two escorts all walked through it. Well, Imiril had to literally be dragged through it by Hilda, but that wasn't worth mentioning in the report.
How come the prisoner is more cooperative than his guards?
Boxy wondered.
Is she right in the head? No, she definitely has a few hinges loose. Must be all that lightning.
After reaffirming its intent to stay as far away from the twitchy wizard as possible, Boxy took the heavy coffer from the designated coin carrier. Putting on an unconvincing smile, it went off towards the tall trunk by itself. What played out once it reached the base of the tree was the familiar sight of the tall, hooded figure dropping down from above, accepting the chest, handing something over to Kira, and disappearing back into the canopy. This was exactly what transpired in previous visits, barring two major details. The first was the nature of the payoff. The metal chest wasn't filled with coins, but with gems, jewels, rings, sculptures, and other luxurious trinkets that held great value despite their practical uselessness. Their combined worth was 12,000 GP, but Boxy had no intention of selling them off. Simply put, it already had plenty of coin to spend, and while piles of gold coins glittered in their own special way, it wanted to hoard a wide variety of shinies. The second discrepancy occurred before the Sandman disappeared. He placed his oversized, gloved hand on Kira's head and roughly tousled her hair. She protested at first, fidgeting and flailing her arms about, but gradually calmed down and obediently let the Sandman stroke her head while she looked at her feet. The platoon's spotters had gone on edge at the physical contact, but relaxed once it was clear it wasn't an act of hostility. After a minute of this, he took his hand off her, gave her a thumbs up, and then ascended the trunk via the living vine waiting for him. The second in command received a surprisingly upbeat long-distance message via the catgirl's whisperwind skill.
Optio, Mr. S says it's okay to meet with the Dryad. Bring the prisoner forward.
The VIP trio began walking towards the base of the tree as soon as the instructions were relayed, though some were more reluctant than others.
Come on, beanbag. Move those sticks you call legs,
Hilda demanded.
Ugh, why do I have to be here?
Imiril groaned quietly.
I knew I shouldn't have signed that contract.
If I am allowed to speak, Rooklunda raised his voice, you must confront whatever it is you are afraid of, lest it haunt you for the rest of your days.
That, and if you don't stop wasting my time, I'm gonna slap you so hard you'd fall over like a knot of dry twigs.
Imiril seemed to find her nerve after those words of encouragement, and finally picked up the pace. A short time later, the Stonekin dwarf, the ascended human, and the high elf found themselves standing next to a significantly more cheerful Kira.
That performance should get those busy hoods off my case,
Boxy hoped.
So,
Hilda looked around.
Where's the leafy lass at? Right behind you.
Cirilla gleefully declared. Imiril let out a pathetic scream as she immediately bolted away from the dryad that appeared out of thin air. A small root popped out of the ground, making her trip and fall flat on her face. The mischievous dryad laughed merrily at the wizard's expense.
That's a great reaction you made there. Just makes me want to tease you more.
She held her hands up and wriggled her fingers in a rather creepy fashion that seemed to say, I'm gonna get ya.
No! Get away! Oh, right. Flight!
Finally remembering the existence of magic, the level 100 wizard bolted off into the distance. The rest of the armed escort heard a booming noise as she disappeared beyond the horizon.
Oh, for the love of... What the feck has her so on edge?
Hilda yelled in frustration.
Well, she's afraid I'd repeat the 999 reasons why she should respect her elders.
Who in the what?
The dwarf was confused.
Technically, it was 1,000.
Kira innocently pointed out.
Aw, 1,000?
The berserker racked what brains she had left after decades of headbutting things on a daily basis, and recalled the rumor about the wizard's thorough spanking.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Anyway, this is the man I was talking about, Miss Cirilla.
Kira pointed towards the towering prisoner. He held a stern expression, and his eyes were locked onto the dryad's vine-covered head.
This loser's the one, huh?
Cirilla said mockingly. She then eyed the myriad of yellow tattoos on his chest and arms and gave him a few sniffs for good measure.
Ah, fuck. Why'd you have to bring this prick here?
She complained.
I wouldn't have come out if I knew he was a bloody shaman. Let me guess. He's here to complete the rite of the whatchamacallit, right? Now hold on there,
Hilda butted in.
What's this rite business? Don't think I want to be allowing something shady like that.
You ain't in no position to tell me what to do, Gramps.
Cirilla snapped back.
Gramps?
Hilda's irritation turned to anger, which usually translated into choppy-choppy axie time. However, she dared not provoke the dryad into a physical confrontation. That was a bad idea on several different levels, even without considering the carnage she had witnessed at Fort Yemen.
Well, I don't plan on agreeing on anything like that anyway,
the dryad added.
I ain't about to let some human tell me what to do.
The way she spat in Rucklunda's face made it abundantly clear her grudge was personal. Her feelings of animosity were fresh and stemmed from the Empire's invading forces. They had tried to harvest her tree for timber to build their camps and siege equipment. Dryads usually allowed elves to take a massive branch or two, as pruning was seen as a necessary thing. However, those humans' intentions were to chop her down wholesale. Such a thing was borderline blasphemous.
Hmm? What's up with you, fuckboy?
The dryad scowled at the shaman.
Why are you crying for no reason? Do you miss your mummy or something?
And indeed, looking at the prisoner's face, one could see tears freely flowing from his eyes even as his expression remained stone. Then, in the flash of an eye, he went down on his knees and prostrated himself before the dryad.
I am sorry,
he shouted with all his might.
I am sorry for any offense my countrymen have done to you and your kin. Please, grill me, whip me, skewer me any way you like. I will atone for their sins with my own body, so please.
Cirilla took a few steps back, her face twisted in disgust. This man's attitude was concerningly similar to that of the blue demon with the large wings, but somehow worse. At least the horned pervert was upfront about her kinks.
This shit right here. This is why I hate you fucking shamans. And your druids. You guys are way too fucking intense. Why can't you all be as cool as monster tamers?
I beg of you,
he shouted some more.
Please, let me make amends. Not only for you, but for your sisters to the north as well.
The north? Do I have sisters there?
Hilt trees did not walk, so dryads typically had no idea what lay beyond the reach of their roots.
Yes, Miss Cirilla.
Kira spoke up.
A group of 5 of them, actually.
Did the humans try to do something to them, too?
One of them got burned a bit by a dragon, but we paid him back for it.
Oh, a dragon, huh?
The dryad calmed a bit.
I see. So it was a dragon. That's rather unexpected. Dragons don't usually show up around here, after all. I hope it wasn't a yellow one.
No, it was green.
Ah, of course, a green one. Right, it has to be a green one, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you consider the sun and the, climate and stuff.
Cirilla nodded her head several times while cupping her chin, then turned around to face Kira with an intense look.
What's a dragon?
Before the cat girl could find the right words, a certain someone started crying loudly again.
Please, I beg of you.
Can someone shut that guy up?
Hilda shrugged, then kicked the prone man in the ribs with all her strength. The noise his body made implied she had broken anywhere between one and all of them. Rucklunda coughed and sputtered blood from the sudden trauma, suggesting internal damage to his lungs. He was very much conscious, but no longer in a condition to speak.
Thanks, Shorty.
I think nothing of it. He was pissing me off, too.
Hilda smiled fiercely through her helmet.
Anyway, I don't need some creepy crybaby's help.
The dryad crossed her arms defiantly.
My new mates already took care of those pesky humans for me.
New mates?
The dwarf inquired.
Yeah, that guy with the heavy cloak. Well, he's not around much, but his pets keep me company. They're teaching me all kinds of fun stuff.
Boxy was relieved it had taken great care to only show its Sandman face in front of the Dryad. It knew from personal experience that Dryads knew almost nothing of subtlety and subterfuge. Cirilla would have surely spilled the beans right then and there if she had any idea that Kira and the Sandman were one and the same. Its vigilance had paid off, but it didn't want to take any chances and tried to steer the conversation in a different direction.
So these friends of yours avenged your sister?
That's right. Don't need no fucking shaman's help. These bastards always try to curry favor with me, you know? Sometimes they hang around for months chanting some stupid words at me, but I just ignore them and stay in my tree. They either get bored and leave or they die of starvation because they're idiots.
There, you see, Mr. Rocky?
Said Kira with a smile.
No need to get so upset, okay?
The squirming man gave her merely a nod in return. He only took part in the war after he was shown evidence that the elves were exploiting the sacred hilt trees. However, after witnessing the reckless actions of that monster tamer's pet dragon, as well as the miraculous rate at which the tree recovered, he started to doubt if he was on the right side of the conflict. Those concerns grew into suspicion when the large-scale impalement started. His connection to the soil allowed him to grasp the sheer magnitude of the root movements beneath his feet, which were clearly beyond the abilities of mere mortals. The only explanation Rooklunda could think of was that the legendary dryads compelled their trees to aid the elves, which they surely would not have done if they felt mistreated. This meeting had confirmed his suspicions, just as the shaman hoped it would. He didn't know why he alone was spared from that massacre, nor did he care anymore. One of the living testaments to nature's perseverance and grace was before his very eyes, and she made it clear that she was an ally of sorts to the Republic. With this knowledge, he no longer had any qualms about revealing everything he knew about the Empire's plans for the war, as per his deal with the Third Legion. He was even willing to face his countrymen in battle, though he doubted the Republic would trust someone who had caused so much damage.
We done here, Rocky?
Hilda loomed over the man. He nodded his head in affirmation.
All right then, up you go.
The dwarf lent him her shoulder, although considering the height difference, it wasn't much help. Still, the two reached an awkward balance and started heading back towards the rest of the platoon. Their ride was gone, so they'd have to go back to base the hard way after healing up the prisoner's ribs.
We'll be leaving now, Miss Cirilla,
Kira declared with a smile.
Thank you for meeting with us.
Eh? He's going away? Just like that?
Yep, seems he just wanted to see you with his own eyes or something.
The redhead shrugged.
Oh, I see. At least he knows his place.
Yes, quite so. Well then, goodbye, Miss Cirilla.
Whatever.
The cat girl waved to the dryad and jogged towards Rocky and Hilda. The dryad returned the friendly gesture. She wasn't sure why, but she felt strangely close to that girl. No, that couldn't be it. Surely that sensation was just relief that the shaman wasn't there to perform the stupid rite. She didn't quite remember what it was called, but she almost got roped into it once before, when she was young and naive. She didn't know everything it involved, but she knew enough. The purpose of the rite was to have the shaman or druid obtain some kind of perk by drinking her precious nectar. It was unacceptable. A dryad's nectar had a special and intimate meaning to them. It wasn't the sort of thing to be shared with just anyone, let alone some fleshy weirdos and their creepy rituals. The tall, diligent stranger she met a few weeks ago was different, however. Even though he used her mother's authority, he didn't once presume to give her orders or make demands. He treated her with the respect she was due and performed a number of favors for her. He even taught her a few tricks about handling various vermin all on her own. All he asked in return was a quiet place for him and his minions to lie low. This was the first time someone had helped her out that much while asking so little in return. It really was a shame only his pets were around lately. If anyone earned the right to sample her nectar, it was the Sandman. In fact, after that brief bout of consideration, Cirilla found herself rather